Hey everyone, welcome in to Morning Invest on this Tuesday, October 5th. On today's show, we'll be talking about the debt ceiling. The problem is worse than we thought it was. President Biden warns of economic catastrophe unless we move this debt ceiling quickly. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. Mitch McConnell is digging his heels in. Mainstream media is trying to paint Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema as heroes, sent here from heaven to save us all from a costly stimulus package. Do you need health care? Do you need, child care? Do you need cheaper prescription drugs? Well, guess what? The mainstream media is here to tell us you don't need that stuff. And Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin are here to protect us from all of this additional spending.
Come on, man.
Exactly, Joe. And a group of Democrats are trying to end the ridiculous Space Force and save the country from building a new space military. I'm going to show you this congressman who I would say is a hero this morning, sticking his neck out there on this. And I think there's a number of members of Congress that have signed on to this as well. You should know his name and you should know their names. You ready to get uncomfortable? Some news that'll make you uncomfortable? Morning Invest starts right now on this Tuesday. Welcome to Morning Invest on this Tuesday. I'm Clayton Morris. Hope you're having a wonderful, wonderful Tuesday. We do have a daily morning newsletter, as you can see from that little open there where Natalie and I are laying on the loungers. That's what we're reading. It's a daily newsletter. You can get it totally for free by going to morninginvest.com right there, morninginvest.com. You get the free newsletter delivered right to your inbox first thing in the morning. So you can be more informed. Plus, we're giving away some free stuff as well. If you refer friends, we're going to be doing some of our new sweatshirts that we're going to be giving away and some of our Grover mugs, all of them available as part of our giveaway and referral program inside the newsletter. All right, let's talk about, folks, the debt crisis today. Let's start with our top story. And there's one thing in Washington you should be paying attention to right now. It's the rapidly worsening political conflict over lifting this debt limit. The situation is pretty alarming. There's no other way to put it. There's no other way to sugarcoat it, quite honestly. President Biden spoke about the impending doom, and he pointed fingers right at Republicans using the power of the press and the bully pulpit, as it were. I guess you could call it the bully pulpit. That's the name of the podium, I guess. To point fingers right at Mitch McConnell. Listen.
Good morning. Well, come as no surprise to you. I'd like to talk about what we need today to raise the debt limit. And why the Republicans in Congress, what they're doing today is so reckless and dangerous, in my view. Raising the debt limit comes down to paying what we already owe, what has already been acquired, not anything new. It starts with the simple truth. The United States is a nation that pays its bills and always has. From its inception, we have never defaulted. What we pay for, so it keeps us a great nation. Social Security benefits for seniors, salaries for brave service members,
we always pay our debts,
veterans, and other financial obligations for our people and for our nation. We're able to meet these obligations based on the revenue we receive from taxes and based on our ability to borrow when needed. And in that case, we're able to borrow because we always pay our debt. We always paid what we owe. We've never failed.
And he's right about that. We've never defaulted. This would be a catastrophe. We'll get more into that in a second. So after he gave his spiel there about Republicans, he went on to what he asked, like a reporter asked him a question. What were you going to say?
Well, didn't our credit rating get downgraded at one time because we didn't pay our debt, I thought?
Well, our Moody's had downgraded our back during the 2008-2009 collapse, but that wasn't as a result of us not paying our debts.
Gotcha.
It was for other reasons. But we've always paid our debt obligations, but this was a different reason, basically. But a reporter yesterday asked him after he gave his speech there. He said, "Can you guarantee?" The reporter asked that the United States will not reach the debt ceiling. That will not happen, he said. And President Biden says, no, I can't. That's up to Mitch McConnell. So he basically put this right back in Mitch McConnell's lap. So This is an interesting back and forth here. I mean, and I'll try to unpack it for you a little bit. A debt crisis isn't like a government shutdown, guys. Like, if you're having this discussion around the dinner table, what you should understand is this is not a government shutdown. If the U.S. government technically defaults on a $28 trillion debt, the short and the long-term damage to the American economy would be catastrophic, to say the least. And I'm saying that, and Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is saying that. Republicans would say that. Economists would say that. Millions of Americans would basically pay the price for this political stalemate. So it's not the government just being shut down. It would be you would end up paying for this. You would be screwed. And the country's status as the world's leading economic and financial power would be totally jeopardized. And also think about this for a second. 9 months ago, right, we had an insurrection at the Capitol building, right? The rest of the world was looking at us like, whoa, this is happening in America? This doesn't happen in America. You know, we can get into all the how bad was it questions later, whatever. But nevertheless, like, the eyes of the world were on us, you know, looking at this Capitol brouhaha. And everyone's like, ooh, what's going on with the U.S.? Maybe I don't want to put our money there. Now, suddenly, America can't pay its bills on top of that. America would look absolutely weak to the financial world and the markets around the world. So this is all going to come to a focus tomorrow. Tomorrow's a very big day because the Senate has a cloture vote. All this means, not to get you bogged down in like Senate procedural crap, but basically this means that they're going to put on the record, Chuck Schumer is, a debt limit increase. And Republicans then are going to vote against it. They're going to come out and they're going to put their names on this. So Chuck Schumer is basically going to say, hey, come to the Senate floor. Are you for raising the debt limit or are you against it? It's a cloture vote. You know, where do you stand on this? And Republicans are saying right now they're not going to vote for it. Mitch McConnell, turtle boy, has been saying since mid-July that he and his GOP colleagues won't participate in lifting the debt limit. That means that Republicans won't vote to lift the debt limit and they won't allow Democrats to do it by the normal legislative processes that they've always used. So McConnell is demanding Democrats use the reconciliation process to raise this borrowing cap. He's got a couple of incentives on this, right? From a political point of view, there are a few things driving McConnell and Republicans. Even after Republicans spent like drunken Republicans during the Trump years, you know, running up the deficit, $7 trillion. Tax cuts for the wealthy that they couldn't pay for. Now they're suddenly eager to have the political conversation turns back towards the national debt and deficits. Like, this is a huge problem. I can't believe how much debt we have. We don't know where it came from. Never mind the hypocrisy, right? Republicans look at the $3.5 trillion reconciliation package that's been proposed by Biden on top of the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan. And they say rising inflation, we can't pay for this. This is all Democrats being reckless with the country during uncertain times. We can't raise the debt limit. And we'll see. Maybe they're right. Maybe the American people will fall for it.
Well, how come there's never any discussion about the $5 trillion that was transferred to the businesses and stuff during the CARES Act? No mention of that.
No, they could, because, you know, that is money going to Wall Street. So the stuff that they will criticize is money going to you, right? It's lowering prescription drug costs. It's paying for, you know, cradle to grave. You know, we can't be paying for this stuff. That's socialism, taking care of children. That's cradle to grave.
It's like they want to. Keep it in their pockets, but not pay their bills. It's like, oh my gosh, I just got my paycheck. I got $3,000 in the bank. It's so nice, but I owe $2,500 in rent. Gosh, I don't want to, you know, got to pay that bill though. But no, they'd rather, you know,
pretend like keep it and pretend like they don't owe that rent money.
Yeah.
It's basically what their obligations are. And they've already, and by the way, it's like the Republicans have already signed the lease. They signed the lease last year. And now the landlord's saying, hey, time to pay up. And Republicans are saying, hey, well, I know we were in power when this whole thing would happen, but Democrats, you go ahead and pay for the, you guys pay the bill. Take the blame for it. This whole episode is to be viewed as a political attack by McConnell on Democrats' reconciliation package. There's no other way to look at it. Like, if the reconciliation package, the stimulus was not in the conversation, we wouldn't be having this conversation. It also helps that McConnell truly can't be shamed, right? I mean, we've Have we not talked about McConnell time and time again here on the show? This guy has no shame, right? He doesn't care what people say about him. He's kept in an insulated bubble. He doesn't care what you think of him.
If McConnell he did, his wife wouldn't have got all that PPP money.
Well, or maybe he would have given it back if he cared, right? Like his wife gets all this PPP money, all of these government loans during the pandemic, and then he gets called out about it, and then he doesn't say a word about it. No reporters ask him about it. No, he's kept in a bubble. So McConnell seems completely certain that Republicans won't be blamed for any economic meltdown since, hey, Democrats control the White House and they control Congress. And I have to say, politically, he's probably right. I mean, that's how these things go. I don't know. I mean, it was interesting to see during the Obama years, Obama ran the White House and Republicans had Congress and they allowed the government to shut down. And Obama won that. He said, you know, look, you know, look at what the Republicans are doing, shutting down government. And he won that popularity contest. And Democrat and Republicans, I thought at the time, maybe learned their lesson because they got scorched during the midterms. I mean, they got scorched for it politically and from donor money as well. So for Schumer tomorrow, that vote is a very big chance for every Republican on record. Are they going to pay the country's debts? Are they going to pick up the tab for legislation and policies that many Republicans voted for last year? Or are they going to risk default in order to score some political points? We'll see.
This always reminds me so much of Vegas. It's like we're in a casino. The house always wins, but mm-hmm. It's like we get up a little bit. We get a little bit, but we still keep just like, oh man, I'm gonna win big. At some point, I'm gonna win big. I'm gonna hit it big, and then the house always continues to win. And it's like it doesn't matter. Democrats will say this, and then they'll fight over here and fight and get everything and blame the Republicans. And then something comes along, and the Republicans infight and get together and all this stuff and blame the Democrats. But at the end of the day, we never see anything positive from it.
No, I mean, well, maybe we see something positive a little bit later in the show. We're going to talk about Andrew Yang and a surprise about what he's planning to do with a third party. So maybe that's what we get out of this thing, you know?
Let's hope.
Finally, we're sick and tired of both of these parties, this back and forth. And they're both corporate parties, you know? They're both run by big corporations. They're just different shades of it. That's really it, you know? But make no mistake about it. Like this is going to be bad. Like if they don't get this debt limit done, and as somebody points out in the chat, Julia says, Julia Runyon says, doesn't this all need to be done by the 18th of October? Yeah, it does. 18th of October. And by the time they get legislation in place and move forward on this and actually, you know, if they're going to put a framework together, it could, you know, as we saw yesterday and reported here, it could be weeks. We could go past the default or the debt limit default deadline, which would be absolutely catastrophic.
But didn't last time this happened, like this whole drama, they're like, oh, we can extend it a little bit. Then they extended it and then they got enough to finance it for another couple weeks.
No, that's the government. You know, that's the government shutdown problem. Like this is a different animal.
Gotcha.
This is a different animal. So this could be just like the Ghostbusters say.
That this city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
Exactly. Exactly, Venkman. More on that coming up in a moment. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Scoremaster. People were asking me in the chat the other day, said, Clayton, how do you, like if I want to, you know, make my credit score better, what do I do? And the answer was Scoremaster. I just randomly was telling people about that the other day because Scoremaster, you know, I don't know if you know this, but even just like an okay credit score can cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like on your, if you've got like if you've got a loan, you've got a house loan, a car loan, it can cost you a ton of money, especially if you've got, I would say like a mortgage, right? A home loan, a 30-year mortgage can cost you over $100,000 by having an okay credit score. Like, let me know in the chat, guys, like, what is your credit score? Do you even know your credit score? Well, that's where Scoremaster comes in because they can take your credit score from okay to great and they can do it fast. The average user adds 61 points in 20 days or less. Recent COVID surges will keep interest rates low for now. And adding 61 points to your score could save you thousands on a home loan. But those rates will go up soon. So we've been talking about what the Fed's going to do. So before you apply, visit scoremaster.com and add points to your credit score fast. And then you can maintain and protect your credit score with 24/7 credit monitoring and $1 million fraud insurance. It only takes minutes to enroll. See your points, get more points, and qualify for the lowest loan rates. Visit scoremaster.com/invest. That's scoremaster.com/invest to get started today. Rachel Bright in our chat says she's got a 648 credit score. So yeah, this would help you get a number of points there. Artemis says 735. James Figueroa 778. That's good. Arlene says 735.
You know what's crazy? Here's a perfect example, real world example. So I am about a 750 normally is what I was when I went in and got my last car. And I had like 2% interest on my last car loan. Well, a credit card company that I had a credit card with that I canceled the card over a year ago, and there was a $49 annual fee. I did not know about the fee. I had closed it, and that fee, they put me as being like 90 days late on a payment.
Boy. Yeah.
And
yeah,
that took my credit score down to a 640. So when I went to get my new car loan, I was at 12% interest versus 2% just from that difference in a credit score.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I
was telling them, I was like, look at my history. I pay my bills. It's just this stupid credit card. And so I used ScoreMaster. I was able to go in and grab that thing and contest it. And they sent it to the credit bureaus for me. I didn't have to go into TransUnion, go into Equifax and all that and do that myself. They did it for me. And so once that gets removed, it's going to jump up.
That's awesome. Real world example right there from ScoreMaster. Yeah, Joe Stidham in our chat says, my wife is at 586 credit score. Yeah. Yeah, so check it out. Give them a try and help support the show. And they've been a longtime sponsor of ours. So thank you to ScoreMaster. And Loretta, yeah, you got to check that out too. Carmen, I would check it out as well. Hey, TNT New Life says, I never get to catch the show live when school starts, but I'm homesick today. I'm glad I'm here. Well, welcome. I hope you feel better.
We're glad you're sick.
Yeah, we're glad you're sick today. Hope it's not bad.
Yeah.
Hope it's not bad. All right. Moving along here. Let's talk about the stimulus. Yeah, you might have noticed something happening in the mainstream media over the past couple of weeks. I've been calling it out here. I haven't really had a perfect example of this until just yesterday to be able to point this out to you. But I've been saying it here on the show for a couple of weeks that the mainstream media has really been pushing this idea that, wow, we just really can't afford, you know, we really can't afford a stimulus package that's going to help the American people and possibly raise taxes on corporations. Like, where are we going to come up with this money? Where are we going to come up with this money? You know, it's interesting. Where was the mainstream media when Trump was passing the huge tax cuts for the wealthy? Like, well, how are you going to pay for it? Pretty quiet, right? Because all these big businesses were about to get huge tax cuts.
So, well, and so CNN, were they.
And all of the big, you know, they were, yeah, but all of the big media companies were about to get huge tax cuts. So they love this, right? They love that legislation.
More money to raise salaries.
Exactly. Raise salaries. They're going to raise salaries and give you health care. That's what they're going to do.
No, no, no. I mean salaries for the journalists, for the quote unquote journalists.
Right, right. And the CEOs and the golden parachutes and everything. It was great for them. Big windfall for them. Well, you might have noticed that the mainstream media has been trying to paint Joe Manchin of West Virginia, coal monger, Joe Manchin, and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona. They've been trying to paint them as heroes over the past few days. I've been noticing this on I've saw it in the Wall Street Journal. I've seen it on CNN. I've seen it on Fox. I've seen it on MSNBC and a whole slew of other places that Joe Manchin is a hero for questioning the amount we're going to spend on a stimulus package without questioning, even with a straight face, where he gets his money from, right? Or Kyrsten Sinema. Not even bringing up the fact that she's just held these big fundraisers from these big hedge funds and big energy companies where she's been getting so much money. Not even a mention of it. Go ahead.
I think we should have John Ashcroft sing "Where in the Eagle Soars" for them, just for a tribute to them. You know what I mean?
Where the eagles soar. No, I'm not going to do that. But here is, so here is, I was actually singing that in the shower the other day, sadly enough. so you don't ever want to picture that again. But so here is Michael Smirkanish, who I've always had a problem with him. I don't get his angle on CNN. And I think some of the stuff that he says just comes out of nowhere and makes no sense. He did an entire segment, though, just basically giving a huge kiss to Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin and calls them heroes. Heroes in this. I'm going to play this and we'll talk about it.
Senators Manchin and Sinema, the problem or the solution? I'm Michael Smirkanish in Philadelphia. It's been a roller coaster of a week in Washington as Democrats tried to advance a $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill passed with bipartisan support and a more ambitious $3.5 trillion expansion of the societal safety net that lacks a single Republican supporter. In the end, Speaker Pelosi, having given problem solvers her word, still couldn't deliver a vote. There are 535 members of Congress, but two held the most sway. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Senator Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona. The political game of chicken between House progressives and moderates was actually dependent upon these two senators, whose votes are needed for the larger package to get through the Senate via reconciliation, which requires every single Democratic vote plus Vice President Kamala Harris. Manchin released a statement earlier in the week, and he said this: I can't support $3.5 trillion more in spending when we have already spent $5.4 trillion since last March. At some point, all of us, regardless of party, must ask the simple question, how much is enough? What I have made clear to the president and Democratic leaders is that spending trillions more on new and expanded government programs when we can't even pay for the essential social programs like Social Security and Medicare is the definition of fiscal insanity. Sinema held her cards closer to the vest, tweeting that in August, she had shared her detailed concerns and priorities, including dollar figures, with President Biden and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Here's an indication of her importance. This week, Biden and his aides met with Sinema four times in one day. For their attempts to grapple with the actual numbers and cost, both Sinema and Manchin incurred the wrath of the party's more progressive elements. But Manchin and Sinema are deserving of our praise.
They're deserving of our praise. Go on, Michael. We need to praise these moderate Democrats who are paid by big businesses to stifle this massive stimulus package, which would help millions of Americans. They're in need of praise.
Not our criticism. Their refusal to simply fall in line and instead exhibit some independence is both a rarity in Washington and a reflection of their diverse constituencies. Consider that Sinema's Arizona constituents pretty evenly divide between R's and D's and I's.
Okay. Interesting. And then he goes on to talk more about the constituencies, but he makes no mention. So he's talking about how Kyrsten Sinema represents Republicans and Democrats and something else. Okay. Who cares? Is this as if the stimulus package is a partisan issue? Like it's a Republican, Republicans are against it. Democrats are for it. Independents are in the middle. They can't really decide. No.
Isn't there poll data to probably back up to counter that?
Yeah. So overall, the look at this, the long-term care, modernizing the electricity grid, K-12 schools, pathway to citizenship, universal pre-K, civilian climate corps, tuition-free community college, lowering Medicare eligibility age, extending child tax benefits. All of them overwhelmingly supported. Overwhelmingly positive support. So, and by the way, in Arizona, the stimulus package is hugely popular. Hugely popular. And Kyrsten Sinema's poll numbers are plummeting. Like someone's taking the air out of a balloon. And by the way, so is Joe Manchin. By the way, the stimulus package in West Virginia is hugely popular. So they should be praised as heroes, held up as heroes, these two. That's CNN. A whole segment devoted to how great Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema are for questioning the spending of Washington. And by the way, really sticking their neck out and doing something that's very unique in Congress. Like, we just don't see these types of moderates really pushing the envelope. Yeah, we do. That's all we do. This is why stuff doesn't get done. It's because of people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. This is what always happens in Washington. You know, I saw a study the other day that shows just how many bills are even able to come out of the Senate, even able to get off the, like, onto the floor for a vote. It's almost nothing now. About a decade ago, it used to be a couple of hundred. Now it's down to zero. Nothing gets done. Nothing. Because of people like them. People like them. The only reason we... or maybe we'll get anything is because the Progressive Caucus actually stood up and said, no, wait a second. We are not going to go along with this bipartisan infrastructure bill until you pass this $3.5 trillion plan. So that is the only difference this time, is that the Progressive Caucus actually moved us forward in this debate. Otherwise, we might not have anything. But Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin should not be praised. They're doing the exact same thing that corporate politicians have done for generations. Take money from these big companies, drive a wedge in our politics, and drag their feet, basically, so that nothing gets done. The reason they don't want to support this $3.5 trillion stimulus package is because taxes will go up for these businesses. Bottom line, prescription drugs will come down. Bottom line, coverage for dental, vision, hearing under Medicaid will be in place thanks to Bernie Sanders. Who will that hurt? Big pharmaceutical companies. It will hurt. It will also hurt big pharmaceutical companies, big energy companies, drug companies, you name it. It's a battle of corporate versus those people that actually want to change in this country. So David Sirota, I want to play this again because yesterday, I think David Sirota hits the nail on the head. Great journalist. This is what he said yesterday about this corporate interests. And I think just this Smirconish piece just totally underlines this. So here's David Sirota yesterday.
Why we exist and why we do what we do, which is to say that to me, the reconciliation bill debate is really, it's not a battle between progressives and centrists, quote unquote. It's a battle between basic climate science, the basic policies we know we need to do to deal with things like the healthcare crisis and inequality. That's on one side, versus blatant corruption, right? I mean, like, let's just be honest about what's happening here. I mean, this is a battle between essentially what people need and what money wants. But if you pay attention to the corporate media's coverage of this battle, you think it's a battle between ideological factions or, you know, a palace drama or, you know, one or two politicians over here who just have an honest disagreement. That, in other words, money is written out of the story.
Exactly. And notice, by the way, that Michael Smirconish didn't even talk about the money that was flowing into Kyrsten Sinema's wallet. Notice that Michael Smirconish didn't even mention the money that Joe Manchin gets from corporate interests. He could have added that to his piece, to be fair, right? He could have said, well, I think that they are heroes, but there are many who believe that they are just corrupt. And here's why. All of the money that flows. He didn't mention that at all. No mention of it.
It does appear, though, that no fashion is flowing into her wardrobe.
Oh, into Kyrsten Sinema's wardrobe?
Yeah,
with those, with the sneakers and sundresses. But yeah. I guess that's the new look now.
I don't know. I mean, I'm more worried about the earrings that don't match.
That's what they're more concerned about. Yeah, like I've seen like multiple articles about Kyrsten Sinema's wardrobe. Like, good, really.
Yeah.
Glad that you're focused on this. Glad you're focused on real substance. Exactly. So, you know, Chuck Schumer says that he wants this thing passed within days. Well, good luck passing a stimulus when you've got Joe Manchin, who's getting all of these big, you know, from the mainstream media. Like, suddenly now he's a hero? CNN's having him on. Kyrsten Sinema is a hero? These two are really making sure that you don't get the stimulus package that you need. You don't need to eat.
You can see it in her.
I was trying to give you some background music while you talked about these heroes.
They are heroes. They really are.
They put their lives on the line for us every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. These guys are superheroes. She's far too young to die. You can see it in her eye. She's not yet begun to fly. It's time to let the mighty eagle soar once more.
Everybody, let's have a moment of silence for Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema.
Eagle soar
like she's never soared before.
Thank you, John Ashcroft. Thank you, John Ashcroft. I really miss you as Attorney General and your dulcet tones of Let the Eagles Soar.
Yes.
That's Joe Manchin. That is a song for Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Let America Soar once more. Oh, my God. I don't want to hear that again. Actually, I
the
do.
The real heroes.
It. Yeah. Mm. Let's talk about the Space Force. So, talking about soaring, congressmen... Well, Congress has come out and basically said, hey, we've got a plan. We want to stop Space Force. And I couldn't be more excited about this. A no militarization of the Space Act has just been launched, which would abolish the new U.S. Space Force. That's right. The U.S. Space Force, which is what now just like, I don't know, a few years old, it would abolish the Space Force altogether. It's been introduced in the United States Congress. It is sponsored by five members of the House of Representatives, led by Representative Jared Huffman. By the way, this is a promotional video, a recruitment video for Space Force. By the way, this is their actual recruitment video. So Representative Jared Huffman, who I think he's a hero. Like, that's who we should play Fly Eagle Soar, John Ashcroft song for him, because he released a statement calling the United States Space Force costly and unnecessary. Remember, the U.S. Space Force was established in 2019 as the sixth branch of the U.S. Armed Forces after Donald Trump asserted that it's not enough merely to have an American presence in space. We must have American dominance in space. Remember, we're a global force for good, right?
We're so interstellar force for good now.
We'd be an interstellar force for good. We'll stick our interstellar boot up your ass.
Bring right? it on, you little aliens.
It's what we need to do. We need to spend trillions on this, right? Because God knows, like, you guys are doing fine at home, right? You guys are all fine. You guys have enough food to eat, and, you know.
There's a lot of planets out there that might have resources that we need, though. Could you imagine if we found pineapple and quinoa somewhere else? Holy cow.
That's true. Or if we found uranium or gold or, you know, other stuff on other
stuff that we can use to make our phone screens.
Yeah, all of that. You know, a global network against nuclear power in space. So let me just show you a picture here. Let me show you a video of Jared Huffman. Here's Jared Huffman. I want you to know who this guy is. Representative Jared Huffman. He's a Democrat in the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He's out of California. I reached out to his team this morning. I'd love to have him on the show. So I'd love to talk about, I'd love to talk to him about this. So one of the things that the global network against weapons and nuclear power in space said that this was a fantastic move. The global network against weapons and nuclear power in space, that's a group. They came out. The global network congratulates Representatives Huffman and his co-sponsors for their truthful and their valiant introduction of a bill to abolish the wasteful and provocative Space Force, said Bruce Gannon, the company's organizer. Representative Huffman declared, "The longstanding neutrality of space has fostered a competitive, non-militarized age of exploration every nation and generation has valued since the first days of space travel. But since its creation under the former Trump administration, the Space Force has threatened longstanding peace and flagrantly wasted billions of taxpayer dollars." He went on to say, "It's time we turn our attention back to where it belongs, addressing urgent domestic and international priorities like battling COVID-19, climate change, growing economic inequality. Our mission must be to support the American people, not spend billions on the militarization of space." Bruce Gannon, from this Global Network Against Weapons in Space, said, "There can be no question that we do not need a new arms race in space. At the very time that climate crisis is raging, our medical care system is collapsing," which it is, and the wealth divide is growing beyond imagination, said Gannon. How dare we even consider spending trillions of dollars so the United States can become a master of space?
Well, we have to have a base on every planet, you know.
Right. Yeah, we need one on Mercury. We got to have a planet on. We got to have a base on Venus, although it's like volcanic, so it'll probably just melt.
Definitely Mars.
Put it on there. Mars, absolutely. We're already working on that. We've got to have a moon base on the dark side of the moon, which many people believe there already is one. Beyond that, yeah, we need to have bases all over, right? We need to land on asteroids. We need to be an international force for good that costs trillions of dollars.
And don't forget, we'll absolutely, if we have bases there, we have to have like special missile defense systems, because the missiles are going to perform different in space. So they're going to have to be like gravity defying or anti-gravity defying rockets that don't like miss their target and keep going and come toward the Earth. So there's going to have to be a lot of R&D going into that to be, you know, because yeah, we're going to have to be the most sophisticated too, because we're right, America.
Well, I mean, you know, so we pretend, I guess I really didn't see this. Like, this was maybe I'll admit that I think this whole Space Force thing caught me in a blind spot. And I just thought, oh, that's kind of cute. You know, like Space Force. Okay, I get it. Like, hey, I'm all for space exploration, et cetera. But like, it was kind of one of those things that I didn't really pay much attention to. But it's absolutely brilliant. From a military industrial complex perspective, right? How can we spend trillions more money, more dollars from Boeing giving money to all of these different companies, right? How can we do it? Oh, let's just launch a new branch of the military that we don't have to actually be at war with anyone technically, like Afghanistan and those types of. Now we just need to expand into space.
Well, think about it.
You might think I'm joking, but I mean, there's already contracts that have been going out to these different companies.
Well, and think about how lax they've been getting on UFO sightings and stuff. They've been releasing more of that information and let it be more public knowledge, because I think they're trying to create that boogeyman.
Well, yeah. I mean, like Marco Rubio, right? I was praising Marco Rubio, senator, who was actually saying, hey, we need to investigate these UFOs. Like, they're literally hover. But his angle on it, if you dig deeper, is, I believe, money related, right? Because he's saying, hey, this is a national security risk. They're hovering over nuclear weapons bases in the United States, and they're turning off our nuclear weapons. We need to investigate. We need to build a new UFO deterrent system to make sure they don't shut off our nuclear weapons. Like, that's what's, you know, that's their motivation, not exploration. And we just want to know what's going on here. No, money, 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 money.
Yep. We will be the one. If there are aliens out there, we will be the ones that you don't want to come to your planet. We will not be the ones coming in peace. We won't be the da 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 da. We be the da da da.
Exactly. Like all the, oh, here come the Americans. Oh, God. Who invited them? So, you know, you don't need to look very far. Just look to CNBC. Watch this segment with a Space Force contracted company that's already receiving millions of dollars. Already receiving millions of dollars for a Space Force contract. Watch this.
Thank you very much, Morgan. Great to be back.
So you just got awarded this $24.3 million contract from the U.S. Space Force. It really puts you in kind of this elite class of rocket makers alongside the likes of SpaceX and United Launch Alliance. Under this program, what does this money enable in terms of the development of this new Neutron rocket?
A new perm for my hair, perhaps? I don't know. I don't know.
And did you see that smirk he got when he got a $23 million contract? His smirk is just like, yeah, I did.
Yeah. She's like, and you know, this really puts you in this elite group. You know, it's amazing. Whenever she covers space stuff for CNBC a lot, Morgan Brennan, and they send her out to like go cover the Blue Origin launch and those types of things, right? And she's always just like fawning over it. You know, she's always just like, this is a historic day for America. This is an amazing moment. Like, it's always this fawning over all of these big businesses. And here she's like, you know, you just were awarded. It really puts you in this elite group, you know, with Blue Origin and these other big companies, at Virgin Galactic. You're going to make a lot of money, right? This money's great for you.
Yeah, so this program is really focused on the upper stage of the launch vehicle, the second stage, if you will. But I guess the more important part of this contract is just great validation and endorsement from the U.S. government customer that this vehicle is seen as going to be very, very important for the future of national security and space launch.
Oh, national security. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, yeah, just to be clear, national security and space launch. So we're just really focused. Saying thank you for the millions of dollars from you, the taxpayers, okay, as part of this Space Force spend. Like, you know, we're already spending $750 billion a year on defense. Now, add in the friggin' Space Force so we can build all of this national security rockets to protect ourselves.
And notice, it's national security, not international. It's like, oh my gosh, we got an alien coming in with a rocket. They got it's heading, it's heading towards Russia. Okay, let it go.
Yeah, yeah. It's international. Now we're really concerned, right? We were so concerned about a couple of brown people on camels in Afghanistan, right? Like, that's what we love to do is, like, you know, kill as many people of color in foreign nations as we can, right? Then we can classify that as national security. And now we're going to take that same level of national security to space.
Green people bad.
Green people. Yeah, now it's green people. So that we can't pass the stimulus package, but we can fawn over this stuff all over CNBC.
Given the fact that you do have this contract with the government, does it enable you to develop the rocket more quickly? Or how are you thinking about that as we go out into the coming years?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's always great to have more funding to...
Yeah, it's always great to have taxpayer funding. You know, are you going to be able to do this more quickly now, thanks to the U.S. government giving you a check for $30 million? Like, is that going to be good for you guys? Like, that's great. Congratulations, you guys. Like, that's great. We're going to develop a neutron rocket so we can, we're going to win this Space Force contract. We're really, very happy about that. That's great. So anyway, you know, with California representatives as co-sponsors of the measure, we have Mark Polkan of Wisconsin, chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, Maxine Waters of California has co-signed this thing. Rashid Tlaib of Michigan and Jesus Garcia of Illinois, all are Democrats, all are calling for the abolishment of the Space Force. So again, good job to Jared Huffman, Representative Huffman, for bringing this forward. Let's see if the other Democrats have the balls to pass this thing.
Wouldn't you think
they going to see this as a big money grab for a big business once again?
Wouldn't you think it'd be more valuable to explore first and get beyond the, like, we can really only get to the moon with people, you know? So, like, and maybe a little bit further, but, like, shouldn't we explore space more and find out what's out there and approach it as an actual, you know, not force for good, but, like, with good intentions? Because we don't know what's
NASA's
out there.
For. But that's what NASA does.
Well, no, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. Like, that should be limited to those places. NASA, SpaceX, like, let them do that. They're already doing it. And SpaceX is using their own money in most cases.
Yeah, exactly. The private sector has proven that it can do some pretty amazing things, right? Like, Elon Musk and Tesla and SpaceX are planning to go to Mars. Like, I bet you SpaceX gets to Mars before anybody else. And perhaps even sets up, like, a Mars base. You know, and I hope he puts, like, a Tesla car on Mars, right? Go for it. Use your own money. So why we need now this national security apparatus in the Space Force? Soon, I'm telling you, like, we have a Navy. What you watch, right? We launched the Space Force. In a few years from now, we're going to have, like, the Deep Underwater Force.
Well, and I, like, feel like it's because...
Atlantis Force, you know?
I feel like it's because their whole narrative is falling apart on why we're overseas. Like, the war on terror is falling apart.
Right.
Like, people are getting sick of it. Like, why are we spending all this money? So it's like, because for the longest time with no media coverage and everything, that's an invisible boogeyman. Just like the war on drugs is kind of an invisible boogeyman. Now they've got an invisible space boogeyman that they can constantly say, there's these crafts that we saw off of the, you know, just off the left side of the moon, and people are going to buy it because we can't see it. We don't have telescopes and all that stuff. So propaganda would be easy with space.
Oh, yeah. Very easy. And, like, we have so much propaganda already in the form, even now on Earth, just using our intelligence apparatus to say that there's terrorists in this particular country. We fired this drone strike against this car, and it was because we clearly thought it was terrorists. Turns out it wasn't. It was just a group of children that we ended up destroying, you know? So I agree. I mean,
Well, we just don't want the, you know, to let the aliens get bombs, weapons of mass destruction, and have it come in the form of a mushroom cloud. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, they pretend. That's the thing. It's like I have a whole channel, my whole paranormal post channel, you know, and it's devoted to looking at the paranormal question, you know, and it's devoted to looking at, you know, a UFO question and all of that. And I've been studying this topic for many, many years. I've interviewed high level members of the military, generals. I've interviewed, like I said, the Air Force One pilot for President Obama, who talked about being tracked by a UFO while flying Air Force One. Like, this is no joke. Like, these exist, right? So that angle I'm fascinated about, like this, what do we don't know about this universe, right? But then, of course, Congress is going to use that to try to raise money so that we can say it's a national security threat. And that's what, it's just amazing. They'll use anything they can get their hands on to try to raise money. It's not amazing. I think it's just sad. It's really sad.
It is.
Anyway. Yeah, so we got more to get to here on the show. I do want to get to this Andrew Yang story in a moment, but I want to tell you about our friends at IP Vanish right now, because, you know, it's so important these days when you're on the internet, no one should have any access to what you're doing, your banking, your emails, any of that, right?
Especially aliens, you know,
especially aliens, like they are a national security threat, as we just talked about, right? That's why we need our Space Force. That's why you need IP Vanish so the aliens can't get you. IP Vanish is here to help you take back your privacy and help you become anonymous on the internet. So what is IP Vanish? It's a virtual private network, a VPN for short. VPN is an important tool that helps you safely browse the internet. You can use a VPN on your computers, tablets, phones, even things like your Fire Stick when you're streaming media. It's really easy. When you use a VPN, all your data is encrypted. What you're reading, what you're searching, what you're watching, whatever it is you're doing. So for listeners of the show right now, IP Vanish is offering an incredible 65% off their annual plan, equal to 6 months for free. IP Vanish is super easy to use. You turn it on with the click of a button and it runs in the background while you browse the web. If you run into a problem, no problem at all. IP Vanish has 24/7 customer support by email, by chat, and telephone. So go to ipvanish.com/invest. Claim your 65% savings. Their annual plan is just $44.99 for the first year with our exclusive discount. It's time to sign up. With our discount and their current promotion, you can get a VPN for 65% off their usual offering. IPVanish is the best of the best, even rated 4.7 out of 5 on Trustpilot with more than 6,000 reviews. Remember, it's ipvanish.com/invest to get the deal and start protecting yourself online. Our thanks to IP Vanish for supporting the show. All right, we got more news to get to. Last story I want to cover for you today, Andrew Yang. So I've been a big fan of Andrew Yang for a couple of years now, as it's no secret here on the show that I've been a fan of him. And one of the reasons why is because I think he tells it straight, I think he tells it honestly, and he's been a big proponent of universal basic income. This idea that what if we gave $1,000 a month to families in America to protect them, to provide a safety net, right? Other countries are doing it. That's how he rose to prominence during the Democratic primary. He was ahead of people like Kamala Harris in the polls. But did the mainstream media put him on their air and interview him? No, they didn't. In fact, MSNBC, it was revealed, had a moratorium on bringing him on the air. Producers were told he's not allowed on the show. Even when they put up graphics as to who was running for president on the Democratic side, guess who was left off that list? Andrew Yang's face was off the list, even though he was beating Kamala Harris in the polls. Talk about mainstream media hypocrisy, right? They also did the same thing to Bernie Sanders. So then it was no surprise then that he lost the primary, right? He didn't win. But the Yang gang is pretty darn strong, right? So then he runs for mayor of New York City. And what happens once again? The mainstream media, the New York Times and others blast him and drag his name through the mud. And that's why he loses. As a Democrat, he ran as a Democrat both times. So now, former presidential and New York City mayoral candidate Andrew Yang announced on Monday that he is changing his voter registration, making an official break with the Democratic Party. He's done. Good. He said, quote, "I've been a Democrat my entire adult life. And he said, and yet I'm confident that I no longer that being a Democrat is the right thing. Welcome to the club, my friend. Yang is set to release a book titled Forward, Notes on the Future of Our Democracy later this week. So his new book will be out later this week. So he's starting now what he's calling a new third party, a new third party called the Forward Party. According to reports in his book, he hasn't really come out and saying that. So that's in like the last chapter of his book. Yang said that his new focus is on promoting adoption of open primaries and ranked choice voting. So these are going to be two of his big, big pushes. Curious to see if he'll be talking more about universal basic income. We'll get there in a second and the effectiveness of UBI. But so ranked choice voting, what is ranked choice voting? Well, ranked choice voting exists in Maine. And other areas are starting to really get serious about ranked choice voting. What it means is that you as a third party candidate, if you poll well and do pretty darn well, the people who vote for you get to rank who they want to be chosen in that primary or that election. So let's just say, for instance, where there's three people, right? There's, there's the dwarfs, right? The seven dwarfs, right? So you've got Sleepy, Sneezy, and Grumpy, okay? The reason I'm thinking of these dwarfs is because my little girl, 5-year-old, climbed in bed with me this morning and she said, let's play the guessing game. So for 30 minutes, I was snuggling with her and I was asking her like different princesses and she had to guess little things about them. So I said, all right, you need to name the seven dwarfs. And for like 30 minutes, she could not remember Dopey. So we just couldn't get through the seven dwarfs. Anyway, so that's why these dwarfs are on my mind. Anyway, so three dwarfs, okay? Sneezy, Sleepy, and Who else did I say? Grumpy. Oh, good. Grumpy. Yeah, okay. So you're like, you know, Grumpy is a third party candidate, right? And I don't know that I don't know. If I waste my vote on Grumpy, you know, if I just vote for Grumpy with the normal election system, then I'm throwing my vote away, right? That's the perception of voting for a third party candidate, right? If I vote for the Green Party guy, then I'm really just helping the Republican or something, right? That's the idea. Well, ranked choice voting gets rid of this because now you can vote for whoever you want in the order that you want them. So if your favorite candidate is Grumpy, then you put that person up there, number one on your ballot. Number two, Sneezy, you like Sneezy, maybe not as much as Grumpy. Okay. And if Grumpy doesn't win, then at least you voted for, you know, that's the next on the list. And then Sleepy is the third one. So you're not really a big fan of Sleepy, but you'll take him at, you know, in a pinch. And that's how ranked choice voting works. That way, you're not throwing away your vote. If there's not a plurality of votes for Grumpy, like not enough people voted for Grumpy as a third-party candidate, okay, so then you get your second best, and that's how it works.
I like the idea of it, but the problem I see with it is the fact that they still control the debates, so the majority of people would never hear from those third-party candidates, even know where they stand, because you're not going to see them in debates, you're not going to see them on the media, so... You know, you'd have to fix that before implementing ranked choice, in my opinion. Otherwise, it's going to be the same old thing.
Yeah, but the sad thing is I don't think you're going to be able to fix that. It's like a chicken or an egg thing. I think you have to like start winning these elections so that these third party candidates can actually have a conversation, get to the table about these election commissions and these debate commissions. Like Democrats and Republicans, the RNC and the DNC get to set the stage and decide who gets on stage, and they get to keep out these third party voices.
Well, and there was a third party debate that RT was trying to put on, and you didn't see it anywhere. No media covered it. Nobody else covered it. They will do all they can to suppress third party voices. I mean, look at like Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader was doing very well and got kicked out, like dragged out by police when he went to go to a debate. They didn't want him on stage. And understand right. that's a private company running those debates. It's a private company like that has no oversight.
You know, it's sad, but this is a way, you know, I don't know if this is the answer, and we'll see. I'm going to try to have Andrew Yang here on the show. I'd love to talk with him about this. But again, ranked choice voting and open primaries so that you don't have to be a member of one particular party to vote would be transformative. Certain states already have this. I'm all for ranked choice voting. I think it's a hugely important step forward in our voting system so that we can give third party candidates a voice. But also, of course, a big piece of his platform has been universal basic income, right? Providing people a safety net, so to speak, of $1,000 a month. That was his plan. You know, $1,000 a month that would provide, take away, help remove some of that anxiety for people. Like, I'll just ask you in the chat, like, how many of you would have your life transformed if you were able to receive $1,000 a month as a sort of no questions asked universal basic income to help you, you know, maybe alleviate some anxiety and stress, that you could start a business, you know, not have to work three jobs to put food on the table?
A family of two, that's $24,000 a year. That's some people's complete salary. Like, there's people that make less than that as their full-time salary.
Right. Right. And, oh, how can we pay for it? I got an idea. Get rid of the friggin' Space Force. You know, like, this idea that we can't pay to help our, we're the richest country in the world. When anyone says that to you, that we can't afford it, just laugh in their face. Laugh in their face.
And you realize, oh,
we can literally spend $1 billion on Israel's Iron Dome project.
We could cut the military budget in half and still be the biggest in the world. In half.
Yeah. We're still 10 times larger. When you combine all of the industrialized countries together, we are 10 times larger
than them combined.
So cut it in half. Yeah, we cut our, you know, military industrial complex money in half, but no one will ever slash it. You know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez introduced a bill last week to slash the military budget by 10%. No way. It's not going to happen. Not going to happen. And specifically the military budget just for, like, weapons. She specifically said, we're not going to cut military pay, like the people, the employees, and the healthcare. Like, she went specifically to make sure that wouldn't get slashed. That's ridiculous. You know, everywhere universal basic income has been tried, has been a success. You know, just looking around the map, you know, here's Andrew Yang, right? Who really focused on that in this piece, you know? And so look at all the places where universal basic income has been tried and has worked. Pretty remarkable. A lot of test bed, you know, like in Finland. Look in the United States where it's been tried and tested, and it's been a great success. You know, look, the U.S. has done more UBI than anywhere else. So I'd like to read Andrew Yang's book. His new book comes out this week. It's called Forward, Notes on the Future of Our Democracy. I'd like to have Andrew Yang here on the show and talk about his new third party, the Forward Party, to see where it goes. I don't know. It's, you know, we have the People's Party, we have the Green Party. You know, it's amazing. I was looking last week or 2 weeks ago in Germany, right? Germany, of course, and Angela Merkel stepping down. She's done now. There was like a bunch of young new parties that had like popped up that had like had enormous support. Like, and you know, part of the government was going to be formed with these new young parties that just came out of nowhere. Could we have that in the United States?
We also have the People's Party, just FYI.
Oh, I said that, yeah.
Oh, you did? Oh.
Yeah, I said the People's Party, the Green Party. What else do we have? Libertarian Party. But that's about it. And none of them really get, I mean, it's so hard for them to get on the ballots. It's so hard for them. They're up against this, you know, Republican-Democrat wall that keeps them out of it.
What did Ross Perot run as?
An independent.
Independent.
I think he was independent. I think he's ran as an I, I think.
I'll look really quick.
I don't think he was libertarian. I think he ran as an independent, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
It says he was Republican.
He might have been a Republican, but he ran as a third-party candidate.
Oh, in 1992, Ross Perot ran unsuccessfully as an independent candidate.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. Because, you know, the argument at the time, of course, was, oh, you're going to take votes away from George H.W. Bush, you know, because he was on more conservative. Ross Perot was more conservative. So, and he did. Like, that's what happened. Bill Clinton didn't get a, you know, huge, I think he only ended up getting like 30-something percent of the vote, Bill Clinton did. So it wasn't an overwhelming trouncing. And really, you could thank Ross Perot for basically allowing Bill Clinton to win. I mean, he really split the vote.
Anyway. Well, and look at how they get blamed. Ross, and then you got Ralph Nader got, you know, eviscerated for what he did, or for what they say he did. He didn't do it, but he's still blamed for that loss. And what's her name? Jill Stein is blamed for Hillary Clinton's loss. It's BS.
Hillary still blames Jill Stein for losing the election. Like, yeah. Really? No, it was not Jill Stein that lost the election. By the way, as most of the people who, you know, in the polls afterwards, when like the people who voted for Jill Stein and the Green Party, when they were asked, like, hey, you know, would you have voted for Hillary if Jill Stein wasn't there? They were like, no, I would not have voted for Hillary.
It's like they think that
they would have. They just would have like transferred their vote over to her. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, they're looking like you voted for her just because she's a woman, right? Another woman. Like, no, right. They actually liked her. She's actually had a lot of good things about her.
Right. But it's her fault. And Hillary to this day is like, well, there was, you know, in Pennsylvania specifically, we had the Green Party that did this and did that. So we, you know, so that really hurt us in Pennsylvania. No. What hurt you was you having no platform, no message, no authenticity. You know, that's what really hurt you, Hillary. Anyway.
And they still don't get it. They still don't get it. Mm.
No.
All right. I am going to do. We got a couple super chats.
Okay. Someone was asking about my mug.
Your face or your cup?
My mug, my cup.
We keep losing music.
Grover would be better than Hillary, Arlene says. Yeah.
I agree.
Anyway, I better run. I got that live stream coming up in about an hour and a half, or about an hour and 20 minutes or so. For the real estate stuff, you want to join us there, please do so. YouTube.com/MorrisInvest. And we'll be back here tomorrow morning. Same bat time, same bat channel. 9 a.m. Eastern for our normal morning show. Thanks, everyone. Hope everyone has a wonderful rest of your Tuesday. Be safe. Peace out, everyone.
Bye, everyone.